Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
Ryan did what Ryan always did. He smoked some crystal meth. And then Ryan did what Ryan always did. He shot some heroin. And then Ryan did what Ryan had never done. He had a heart attack, and he was rushed to the hospital. In this new series, we've been talking about moving past our past, moving past the things we've always done. And yours might not be crystal meth or heroin, but man, we all have things we keep doing, things we don't want to keep doing, but we keep finding ourselves doing. And so in this series, we're learning six rehab principles that get people unstuck. For each principle, as you leave, we're giving it to you printed on the side of a cube. And over the series, you're going to get six sides, and you can put them together. And those six principles put together will give you a path past your past. And at home, you'll have this cube that you've put together that will help you to remember the different principles we've learned and want to keep on living out. The first week, we learned, I can't, God can. That the power I need to get past my past is a power that I don't possess, but God does and makes available to me. Last week, we learned, I asked God to help me own and release my past. That God has a way to release me from the shame and the power of my past. And today's principle is, because I'm God's child, I give my life to do His will. What we're going to learn today is that to move into God's future for us, to get well, I need to give my life to God's will. To get well, I need to give my life to God's will. And really, that begs two questions. First, do you want to get well? And second, do you trust your life to God's will? To address those questions, I want to tell you about a guy. But to tell you about this guy, I first need to tell you about a pool. It's a pool that existed back in Jesus' time, like when Jesus was here walking the earth in human flesh, but it's still around today. You could go visit it. I've actually been there. The pool's in Jerusalem, and back in Jesus' time, this pool had a reputation. People believed that every so often an angel would come and stir the water of the pool. And the belief was that the first person who got into the pool once the water was stirred would get healed of whatever sickness they had. And so every day at this pool, there would be a large crowd of sick people who were there hoping that the water would be stirred and they'd be the first one in. Of this large group of people, the Bible puts the spotlight on one of them, a guy who had been an invalid for 38 years. He had not been able to use either of his legs. He wasn't hopping up and down on one. He could not use either of his legs. And then one day, he met Jesus. I want to show you the story in the Bible. We're going to put all the verses on the screen for you. And if you don't own an easy-to-read translation of the Bible at home, we would love to give you one today as a free gift at the Velcro Bar, which is our connecting place. We've got a stack of Bibles. We'd love to give you one. So John chapter 5, starting in verse 1, we meet this man. It says this, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now, there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" That is a strange question to ask a sick person, isn't it? You can imagine the guy saying, "Yeah, I had thought about it once or twice over the last 38 years. This guy has been sick for 38 years. He can't walk at all. He goes every single day to the place where people go to get well. Yet Jesus has the audacity to ask the question, do you want to get well? It'd be kind of like you or I going to a hospital today and just going room to room saying, would you like to get well? Would you like to get well? We'd probably get some people going, yeah, no, I'm just in the hospital because I love the food. I love Jell-O. Yeah, I want to get well. This is the get well place. That's why we're here. So why did Jesus even ask this question? Well, it may be a better question than we first realize. Because maybe this guy didn't really want to get well. It is possible. Maybe he had kind of gotten used to being sick, and what we're used to becomes very comfortable. Change is uncomfortable. Or maybe there were some benefits to his being sick. I mean, someone was obviously taking care of him, providing food for him, providing him a place to stay, getting him down to the pool. He didn't have to work for any of it. Maybe being sick didn't feel all that bad. Or maybe he wanted to change but thought he never could. You know, it's like he'd been sick for so long. It's not maybe it wasn't that he didn't want to change. He just thought he couldn't. It's like, this is the way I've always been. This is the way I will always be. And I wonder if you can relate to any of that. In this series, we're thinking about that one area in our lives. Maybe there's two where I just feel stuck. It could be an addiction, like the kind of thing that people get sent to rehab for. Or it could be an issue, not something, you know, that big, not something that there's a rehab for, but maybe there should be. Because the truth is, we can't get past this issue. It might be a struggle with, I don't know, your marriage or your kids. Or maybe for you, it's an inability to stop worrying or spending or controlling or eating or looking at pornography or playing video games or fantasizing about being married to a man who's not your husband. Or maybe it's that you can't start. You know, you're just kind of plagued by apathy or procrastination, so you haven't been able to take steps forward in your education or in your career or spiritually. Whatever it is, you may feel like you just can't change. But you can. Actually, what we've learned together in this series is you're right, you can't, but God can. It turns out that making people well is something that God is really, really good at. This is one of the reasons it's so helpful to us that Jesus came, because in the life of Jesus, we see that making people well, changing people, is something that God is really good at. There's a preacher named Tommy Oakes, this kind of old guy from Tennessee, and I heard him imagine something once, and I kind of like the idea. He imagined, what if there was a salesman back in Jesus' time, and what if that salesman had a sales route, as salesmen are prone to do, and what if his sales route, one particular year, just so happened to follow Jesus' path? If you read about Jesus in the Bible, you see that he was almost always going from town to town to town, teaching people, helping people. So what if it just so happened that this sales route, he went to the same places that Jesus went to like 24 hours later? Jesus would come into a town, leave the town, 24 hours later, by coincidence, this guy kept coming into the same town Jesus had just left. And this salesman probably had been doing this route for years, and so he knew the people in that town who was sick, who was hurting, who caused trouble. Well, this salesman route started every year in the Gerasene country. And the Gerasene country was a scary place. So, like, when you went into that area, you had to get there before sundown. The reason is because to get into the town, there was a graveyard. And this graveyard had a man who lived in it. He lived in the graveyard. He was just a guy who was crazy, and he was terrorizing, and people would try to chain him up in the graveyard, but he would break the chains, and he lived out there, and everyone was scared to death of him. So you had to get to the town before dark. Well, this one particular time, the salesman realizes, oh no, I'm running late. I'm going to get there after dark. And so finally he's getting there, and there's the graveyard, and he's kind of like tiptoeing past it, and the weirdest thing happens. Nothing happens. Huh. And so he gets into town, he goes to sleep for the night, he gets up the next morning and he has breakfast with one of his business associates. And they're sitting there and he says to his business associate, he says, hey, a weird thing happened to me last night. What? I came in after sundown. So I went right past the graveyard and nothing happened. So what about the guy? Oh, you mean the guy who used to sleep out there with the bones and live in the graveyard and scare everybody? Yeah, that guy. You see that man sitting over there, the well-dressed man eating his breakfast? Yeah, that's the man. It is not. You're talking about that intelligent-looking, well-dressed, well-behaved man. That's the man. It can't be. And so he goes over to look. He goes over and he introduces himself to the guy, and he can see the chain marks on his arms. He realizes that's the guy. And so he comes back and he sits back down with his friend and he says, what happened to that man? You know what happened to that man? You can read all about it in Mark chapter 5 in the Bible. Jesus happened to that man. One day he met Jesus and his life was changed. See, it turns out that changing people is something Jesus is really good at. The next town on his sales route was Jericho, and this salesman hated going in to Jericho because no one ever had any money to spend. He wouldn't make any sales. The reason is that they had a big tax problem in Jericho. The reason for that is that they had a tax collector there who was just this horrible man. I mean, he would collect your taxes, but he was just this conniving, corrupt, greedy guy who would demand you pay extra money, and there was nothing you could do about it. It was almost like he was like the mafia, and he was a bully, and you just had to pay him. So this one particular time, the salesman comes into town, and as soon as he hits city limits, people start running out to him, and they're like, hey, and they're buying stuff. He's never made a sale here before. He's like, what's going on? Everybody's so free with their money. And so he's like, What happened here? And somebody says, I got a refund. And this lady says, I got 400% back on back taxes. And he's like, I don't get it. What happened here? And they tell him, if you really want to know what happened, you need to go talk to our tax collector, Zacchaeus. Why? Well, you can read all about it in Luke chapter 19 in the Bible. Jesus had met Zacchaeus, and this tax collector, Zacchaeus, had gotten changed. This stingy, greedy man became generous. He became a totally different guy because he met Jesus. It turns out that changing people is something Jesus is really good at. He just does it again and again, place after place, people, everyone he meets. The salesman goes into another town and he asks the people, hey, I just got into town. Where's the blind guy? The guy who's always begging by the side of the road. Where'd he go? And this person says, oh, he's working at the local factory. What? He's working at the local factory. What's he doing? He's operating the machinery over there. He can't operate machinery. He's blind. And he's not blind anymore. He can see now. What do you mean? What happened to him? Jesus happened. Huh? And he said, whoa, hey, also, when I was coming through to this town, that leper colony where there's always the 10 lepers out there, it's abandoned. Did all those lepers finally die? The person says, no, they didn't die, they all went home. What, they can't go home? They'll give leprosy to their families, the whole town will get leprosy. No, they won't. Why not? Well, they met Jesus and they're not lepers anymore. Huh? Just place after place, town after town, person after person, change. And the common denominator is Jesus, because changing people is something that Jesus is really, really good at. And it's not just like physical things, like physical healing either. Like you see him changing people's personalities for the better. Like people who are really mean become really loving. People who are just overwhelmed with fear in life become incredibly courageous. Making people well, changing people, is something Jesus is really good at. And so, healing a lame man beside a pool, piece of cake. piece of cake. And so the question that this lame man has to answer is, do you really want it? And that's the first question for all of us. Do you want to get well? Do you? Maybe you say, yeah, I do. But maybe you really don't. Maybe you think change is impossible. You haven't changed yet. How could change now? Or if we're being honest, there are some benefits you're experiencing to what you keep doing. Or it just might be it's comfortable. You don't like it, but it's what you've always known, and change is uncomfortable. Listen, if you don't want to get well, you won't. You talk to a director of a rehab clinic. I've done that quite a lot recently. They'll tell you, you cannot force change on people. People have to want it. You have to reach a place where the pain of staying the same is greater than the comfort of staying the same. I'll say that again. You have to reach a place where the pain of staying the same is greater than the comfort of staying the same. That's exactly what happened with that guy, Ryan. Ryan OD'd, had a heart attack, went to the hospital, survived, barely. He was told, you need to go to rehab. Nope, he was not ready to get well. So what he did was he went back to living in his tent. 4 months later, he finally had his what am I doing moment. And he decided, I'm not going to keep living the same life I've been living. I want to get well. And so Ryan went to rehab. What about you? Do you want to get well? If so, you have to give your life to God's will. To get well, you have to give your life to God's will. Let's look at how this story continues. So remember, the last thing we saw, Jesus said to the man, do you want to get well? Here's the next verse. Check out the guy's response. Verse 7. Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Oh, great. We have a whiner. The man, instead of just saying, yes, I'd like to get well, or even no, I don't, he just starts making excuses why he hasn't been able to change, why he hasn't been able to get past what he can't get past. How does Jesus respond to his excuses? Check it out. This is important, I think, for us. Verse 8, then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. So this man had excuses, right? We have our excuses for why we do what we do and why we keep doing it and why we could never change. This man had excuses, but Jesus cuts right through them. Now, the excuses may have been true. I'm not saying they weren't true. Jesus didn't say they weren't true. But it doesn't matter if they were true or not, because here's Jesus, and now this man has the opportunity for everything in his life to change because here's Jesus. And listen, you have the opportunity, I have the opportunity for everything in your life to change because of Jesus. This man couldn't, but God can. And here was God giving him a chance. And God is going to give you that same chance. In fact, this was God in Jesus, right? Not just giving the man a chance, but really giving him an order. Jesus said, get up. Pick up your mat, walk. And so this man had to choose, will I obey or not? And you and I have to make that choice. Will I obey what God is asking me to do or not? And that leads to the second question. I said two questions, right? Do you want to get well? And second, do you trust your life to God's will? Do you want to get well? Do you trust your life to God's will? Because to get well, you have to give your life to God's will. But if you don't trust him, you won't. And the truth is, most people don't trust their lives to God's will, right? And people who don't go to church, probably, obviously, almost all of them don't. People who go to church every week, most of them don't trust their lives to God's will. Why? I think some people don't trust God. Instead, they fear him. And there might be all kinds of reasons why we've learned to fear God. Some of you have met my wife. Her name is Jennifer. She's very super sweet, gentle, mild-mannered. She's almost like the polar opposite of me. If you get to know me, you're like, he's not that sweet or gentle or mild-mannered. She is. And so years ago, when my son was, who's now 18, was three, and my daughter was one, we had an ant problem in our house. It would be like every couple days, we'd walk into the kitchen, the garage, whatever, and there would be like ants, like in a conga line. I don't really know. They're too little. I wasn't sure if they were doing the conga. I assumed that it seemed to all be having a good time. And my wife, like, it drove her crazy. Like over time, as this kept happening, she went nuts. Like she would walk into the kitchen and you would hear her scream from wherever you are. You'd hear her scream, ants! And she would just be like, ah! And she would like get so angry and she would start getting stuff to kill the ants. Like she'd go nuts. Well, my son, Dawson, he was three, and he would see this. And he wasn't old enough to differentiate between seeing anger and seeing fear. And so he thought that she was afraid of the ants, that that's what was happening. And so he developed what he thought was the same fear. So he would see ants and he would be like, ants, ah! And he would start running around. But for him, it wasn't aggravation. He was like mortified of these ants because look what his mom did, totally afraid. So I had to retrain him. Like my wife couldn't handle it. She lost the capacity for parenting because of these ants. Like she lost her mind. Up in here. And so I would get down and I would get ants on my hand, which isn't fun. But I would bring them to Dawson and I would say, look, they're not scary. They're just little ants. It's okay. We're not afraid of ants. There's nothing to be afraid of with ants. Because I had to teach him that the way he learned to respond to ants from his mother was not an appropriate way to respond, to think about ants. And some of us have learned to fear God for wrong reasons. We need to be retrained. Hopefully that's what happens here every Sunday. Maybe we learn to fear God from watching a parent or some other role model who, for whatever reason, they feared God or they had anger towards God, and we kind of learn from them to think like they do about God. Or perhaps we went to a church that did not really teach the good news as good news. And if you went to that church, I am so sorry. The Bible talks a lot about the gospel of Jesus. The word gospel means good news. So the idea is, like, as Christians, as a church, what we have to share is really good news. But some churches somehow manage to twist it to make it sound like bad news, like fear-inducing, threatening news. And so maybe that was you, and hearing that just generated fear or anger or just apathy or loathing. And perhaps it's time for you to be retrained and figure out the right way to respond to this loving God who you have. For others of us, it may not be fear of God. We just might have some misconceptions about God and what he wants for my life. You know, so many people have so many wrong ideas about God and what God is all about. And I think that's understandable, right? I mean, like, he is God, right? He's up there. He's God. And we're just little people with little struggling brains. That's no offense to our brains, but they're little struggling brains. And he's God, right? There's a guy named Baron von Hugel. What? Like, this is a guy who, like, his whole life is, like, teaching people and writing about God. That's kind of my life. I teach and people and I write about God. His name is Baron von Hugel, and I am jelly. Anyway, he said, and I think this is pretty right, he said a good analogy that kind of parallels our ability to understand God is a dog's understanding of us. So like think about your dog. Your friend's dog. Your dog knows you. Your dog loves you. But you probably strain your dog's mind a lot, right? Like you walk in through the door and your dog's like, guy's home. I love the guy. Like, he's home. We're going to hang out together. Guy's home. But then your dog's like, why is that guy talking to that little thing again? Like, what is he doing? I didn't. Why is he talking to that little thing? Oh, he's going somewhere. I'm going to follow him. He's going in that little room again. He's in the little room. Why is he sitting on that thing again? What's he doing? Oh, doesn't he know there's a perfectly good backyard to do that in? What's he? He's ruining that good drinking water. What's he doing? Oh, he's putting his pants on. Why does he wear pants? He puts them on, he takes them off. Why does he even wear pants? This guy makes my head hurt. So this Baron von Hugo, what? He felt that our perception of God is probably not a whole lot clearer than our dog's perception of us. Because God is just so big and immense and up there, and we're not, right? And so it's understandable. We're probably not just going to automatically completely understand God. Except, but that's why Jesus came. Because in Jesus, we see exactly what God is really like, in a way that's completely understandable to us. The Bible talks about this a lot. So here's a couple of the verses it says this, of many. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 says, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. The idea being God is up there, but Jesus came down here. God can't be seen. What's he like? What would he do with my life, in my situations? Jesus came down. I can see it all now. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3 says, the Son, that's Jesus, is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. Do you see how significant this is for us? Someone has compared it, made the analogy of Jesus to the Rosetta Stone. I don't know if you know about the Rosetta Stone. Before the discovery of the Rosetta Stone, scholars could only guess at the meaning of hieroglyphics. That they didn't understand hieroglyphics. They just looked at it confused and tried to guess at what it might mean. But then there was this one unforgettable day where archaeologists digged up a dark stone that had the exact same text in Greek, Egyptian, and the previously undecipherable hieroglyphics. And by comparing these translations side by side, they were finally able to decipher and really understand, totally understand, hieroglyphics. And in a very similar way, we learn about God from Jesus. It's like we can know about God. We don't have to guess anymore because of Jesus. We can understand God because of Jesus. We can trust God because of Jesus. And if at times we have our doubts about God, or we find God confusing or incomprehensible or just unknowable, the very best cure is to open the Bible to the books of Matthew or Mark or Luke or John that share Jesus' life with us and stare at Jesus, who is the Rosetta Stone of our faith. And when you get to know Jesus, you realize this: I can trust God. I can trust God. I can trust my life to God's will. Because when you look at Jesus, what you find is he was totally faithful, totally kind, totally compassionate and loving and understanding. Because Jesus came to our world, like, my irrational fears about God have been removed. Almost all of my questions about God have been answered. Most of my confusion about God has been put to rest, and my misconceptions have been changed. It's all because Jesus came to our world. Because of Jesus, we learn that we can trust our lives to God's will. Let's look at what happens next in this story. So remember, what we just saw is verse 8. Then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. But before we move on, think about it for a minute. Like, put yourself in this guy's shoes, his, I guess, completely unused shoes. That might be mean, I don't know. From this man's perspective, walking is the one thing he cannot do. Right? What Jesus just said, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. That's the one thing he knows he cannot do. Well, what do you think, what thoughts do you think are going through his mind as he lays there, as he's been laying there for 38 years? Jesus says, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. I can't imagine. I bet you he had 100 conflicting thoughts bouncing around in his brain. But apparently, one of them was, you know what? My way hasn't worked. I have tried it my way for 38 years, and here I still am. What he's asking me doesn't make any sense to me, but maybe I can trust him. So, in faith, he acts. Look at the next verse. At once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. All of a sudden, the one thing he could not do, he could now do quite well. And what he learned is that changing people is something that Jesus is really good at. The guy at the pool starts out by making these excuses, but then he does one thing that is very right. Jesus says, pick up your mat and walk. He picks up his mat and he walks. He acts on faith, right? Everything inside of him must have screamed, you can't get up. You can't pick up your mat. You can't walk. But he mustered up this little bit of faith, and he decides to trust Jesus, and he obeys, and he picks up his mat, and he walks. And that's exactly what we need to do. We need to trust and obey Jesus. And I understand that is not easy. I get it. But it's what it's going to take for us to get well. Do you want to get well? We have to trust our lives to God's will. And this goes beyond the last 2 weeks. You know, the idea of I can't, God can. That's a little embarrassing to admit that I'm stuck and I can't get myself unstuck, but it's an admission. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to change anything, right? And this idea, I ask God to help me own and release my past. It's like, so what you're saying is God doesn't want me to live in my shame anymore. Sign me up. Like, that sounds good. Right? But with this third principle, it's like what we're saying is, God, you take the steering wheel. I'm going to sit in the passenger seat. I'm giving up control of my life to you. God, your will be done in my life, not my will be done in my life, right? Like we're pulling a Carrie Underwood. Jesus, take the wheel, like hands off. Whatever your will is, God, I will accept it, I will trust, and I will obey whatever you have for me. Gulp. But do you want to get well? If you do, you have to trust your life to God's will. That's what we need to do from now on. Not my way, but his way. Whatever he says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to trust Jesus. And specifically with this issue that I have not been able to get past, I'm going to trust that he can make me well, and I'm going to do whatever he tells me to do, which is a big theme in the Bible, by the way. Here's one example. There's tons. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. It's like if you trust God and in all your ways do what he asks you to do, he will give you a path past your past. So, I wonder what it means for you to give your life to God's will, specifically in that area of your life where you felt stuck. Here's my guess. I bet you already know. I bet you probably already walked in here knowing what you need to do. You just haven't done it yet. And so it's time to actually do it, to act in faith, to trust and obey Jesus. Maybe for you, it's going home and cutting up your credit cards. You don't want to do that, but you know you need to do that. Or maybe it's finally making that call to set up the marriage counseling appointment. Or getting together with a friend and sharing that secret that you've never told anyone so that you can get some support and accountability from your friend. Or going to your boss and saying, I quit. Because you know you're stuck in a career that you do not want to be in. Or going home, driving home from this room, and flushing something down the toilet that you need to get rid of. or maybe you need to come to our new recovery ministry, Restore. Restore is a community of hope and healing. We just had our first night on Tuesday. It's brand new. We had 55 people show up, which is a lot more than I expected to show up. It's very cool. And at Restore, what we're doing is learning how to trust in God and His power instead of trusting in ourselves and our power. And how do we take steps of recovery, specifically in those areas we need help in. And listen, you don't need to have like a serious addiction to go to this recovery ministry. Whatever you're struggling with, these principles will help you. We meet in a big group, and then we are going to break up into little smaller groups where you'll be supported, and you'll be with people who are struggling with similar things to you, and you'll have a leader who's been through recovery and learned these principles and can help. And so like this week, we're going to start small groups, and we've got six of them we're starting this week. Three are for people with substance abuse issues, drugs and alcohol. Three are for people without substance abuse issues, just maybe you worry too much, or you control other people too much, or you try to please people too much, or you pornography, or you eat too much, or you spend too much. Whatever it is, maybe God's will is for you to go this Tuesday night. That guy, Ryan, who I mentioned earlier, who I have permission to share his story, he got off his mat and went to rehab. At rehab, he was taught, you have to become open to this idea of God. He wasn't at that time, but it was like, you're not going to get better. And it wasn't a Christian recovery place. That's what every recovery place teaches you. You have to become open to the idea of God, and you have to give your life to God's will. Later, he had this idea that God wanted him to get off his mat and move to Las Vegas. So he did. And then he felt like God wanted him to get off his mat and go to this church he heard about called Verve. So he did. And then he felt like God wanted him to get off of his mat and give his life to Jesus and get baptized. So last week, he did. And then he felt like God wanted him to get off his mat and become a part of this Restore ministry, and he is. Listen, I don't know what it means for you to trust God and do His will right now, but I do know this. Jesus wants to make you well, but He can't if you just sit on your mat and refuse to move. So do you really want to get well? Jesus can make you well. He can. Changing people is something Jesus is really good at, but you've got to want to. And you got to stop making excuses, and you've got to act on faith. Get up and do whatever it is that Jesus is asking you to do. We're going to give you a few minutes right now to think about all that, to pray about all that if you pray, and I hope to make a decision. Like, what are you going to do with what you just heard these last 30 minutes? What do you need to do? What do you think it is that God is asking you to do? During this time, our band's going to play a song, and we have communion available if you'd like to make that part of your worship experience this morning. Communion's on the candlelit tables around the room. It's a piece of bread and a cup of juice that symbolize, represent Jesus' body and blood given for us on the cross. The idea being, whatever area of your life you feel stuck in, the truth is the main thing that has us stuck is sin. And Jesus died to take care of our sin problem. When we put our faith in Jesus, our sin, literally God takes it and puts it on the cross, and it's removed from us. And that's what we remember and what we celebrate when we take communion. And if you'd like to, you're welcome to do that. So I'm gonna pray for us real quick, and then we'll give you that time for you to pray and make whatever decision you need to. Okay, let's pray. God, I love this story because this guy annoys me, and I think it's just because he reminds me so much of me. I can think back of so many times in my life where I've been stuck in the same spot for so long, and I just made excuses, and they may have been true, or they may not have been true, but I did not do the thing I needed to do to get well. And I'm so thankful that in meeting Jesus, I've gotten unstuck in a lot of areas of my life. God, the question for all of us today is the same one that was asked of that man, do you want to get well? Do we really want to get well? And if so, do we trust our lives to your will? Because to get well, we need to do what you're asking us to do. And the good news is, God, you're on our side. You love us, and so we have this God who's trying to move our lives into a better place, and there's nothing we could do that makes more sense for us than to trust you and do whatever it is you're asking us to do. God, would you show us what we need to do and help us to have the faith to obey you and take that step? Thank you for Jesus, who is so good at making people well, and thanks for communion as a way we remember what he did for us on the cross. I pray in his name. Amen.